Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing. And with me, as she is always, the incredibly wonderful Treya Kaufman.
Hello! We always try so hard to record our podcast every week. I'm actually impressed on how good we are about hitting it like almost every Wednesday, like clockwork. But this week, and normally when we don't hit it, it's also not super obvious. We're like, oh, we can get away with this, no big deal. Like, no one's gonna know. Yeah, this week, we ended up dual recording due to some conflicts that we both had, and there's no pulling the wool over everyone's eyes. We still sound like the two tenors.
We're both gonna die.
We're both sounding like we're about to die.
We're really sick Batman.
Yeah, we're super sick Batman. I love it. Justice with a side order of spaghetti. Yeah. So,
man.
I mean, I'm pretty good. Pretty good. It's just super, super, super tenery over here. Super fun.
Well, what's fun is that, you know, as we mentioned last week, the chapters really flow together. And for us, as we're recording
we're
flowing them together. It is actually perfect
because
we're going to, we're diving into chapter 30 with the Pensieve. But of course, quick note, don't miss us all over the place, because we're wherever you get your podcast. You can find us over on Apple Podcasts, which is a great place to visit us. Just great. It's fantastic.
It's like a Tony the Tiger moment.
It's great. Not as good as Fawcett Note. It is a great place to find us. And then it's the best place to give us a star rating and review, because once you do, it helps other people find the show. And it definitely makes the show more popular on iTunes. So when people are looking for Harry Potter podcasts, they find us. So give us a star rating review and we will shout you out on the show. We'll read your review here on the show. You can find us on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can go over to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Owlpost, and then that email comes to Dre and I, and we get to converse with you that way. So I do love how this chapter picks right up, as we said. And one of the first things that Harry says, which is, Fudge is like, Harry, how are you? And he's like, fine. And then he goes, look, I just wanted to say, I did not see Madame Maxine anywhere, and I'm pretty sure she would have had a hard time hiding, wouldn't she? It's a great moment. It's a fantastic moment.
I feel like Harry is very in tune with these like prejudices that exist within the wizarding world, in terms of like they're very obvious to him when they're happening, right? Like you think about Ron versus Harry, right? Ron has these sort of institutionalized prejudices against these different creatures because that's just what he grew up with and in the society in which he grew up in, where Harry kind of is coming in with that outside perspective. I feel like they're so much more obvious to him, and he just has like, I feel like he just does not have time for it. He just does not have the patience for it, and especially right now he doesn't have the patience for it, and I feel like he doesn't particularly care for Cornelius Fudge in the first place, so he's got no problem like sort of calling it out for what it is.
Well, and then I love in this moment, too, that Rowling mentions that Dumbledore is smiling at Harry. Like, his eyes are twinkling at this moment. Like, he's so proud of what Harry has just done here, which is to show how ridiculous Fudge's argument was with a small, slight bit of logic.
Yeah. I really like, I don't know. I just, in general, really like the Dumbledore-Harry relationship. I feel like there's parts of Harry that remind Dumbledore of maybe not who he was, but who he had always wanted to be. And I think we'll learn a little bit more about that as Dumbledore goes on. But I think there's just things that really resonate there. And, you know, I do feel like Dumbledore really took a liking to Tom Riddle back in the day. You know, he thought there was something off about the kid, but sort of really valued his talent and, you know, had that sympathy for what he had gone through. So I think it's almost like Dumbledore's second chance, I guess, with Harry, right?
Yeah.
So I think that relationship's always really sweet. And I really admire the bravery that Harry always has to just sort of call things for what they are, right? He calls a horse a horse. It's nothing else, so.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that is pretty awesome. And it is one of the things that I really enjoy about rereading this series this way is getting to see the way that their relationship really grows together. I think it is really cool. I love that, you know, Harry says, I just wanted to talk to you. And Dumbledore says, okay, I will be back. So just stay in the office. And I love that Dumbledore leaves with, you know, Fudge and Moody. And he's just feeling so much calmer being in Dumbledore's office in the first place. Like, it just feels good to know that he's about to tell Dumbledore everything. And this is a place for him of, like, almost absolute safety.
I love that my favorite moment here before we get too much into the chapter, as I really, for some reason, it really resonated with me that Harry addressed Fox, like by
yes,
name,
yes.
like almost like a person in the room with him. I think it's just so sweet. And I don't know if we've mentioned this before in any of the podcasts, so forgive me for reiterating something, but I always liked the quote, and I don't know where it comes from, so if you know or if any of our listeners find out, want to let me know, that a true test of character is how you treat those who are like lesser than you. So when you think about someone who treats their pets and things like that, he just has such a caring and like affectionate respect for Fox. And I just think that's just so sweet, you know, like it really stuck with me as he's like, hello, Fox, and just sort of goes along and, you know, he takes the courtesy to address the bird. And it's just a small, tiny moment of kindness that really just like stuck with me in the chapter.
Well, and I also like it because, you know, when you think about, they should have a pretty special relationship.
Yes, they should.
You know, the
based
fact
on
that
the second book.
Yeah. So, I do think that is really awesome, and it even mentions that he kind of swishes his tail and blinks at Harry, and so you know you get this feeling like, you know, there is this sense of like, hey, I remember the last time I saw you, you know.
Yeah. There's a few other things that were the last time we saw them was the second book, like including the Sword of Gryffindor and the Sorting Hat. A few of those other things that really bring Harry back to his time with Voldemort, which I think is an interesting tie back that she's put here, right? Like, she's tying him back to that connection with Tom Riddle and that at that age and, you know, in that same place, because that's about how old Harry is right now. And that's about the place that Harry's at.
Right.
So she's kind of gently nodding you back to that storyline and reminding you of that and what happened and that relationship and what we learned about Tom Riddle at that time here very subtly without sort of being over the top with it and explaining why. But she's bringing you back to that before she dives into this really super cool new magical thing, tool,
yeah,
toy. I don't know, what would you call it? Mechanism?
I would call it a tool,
I
guess.
It's like a power tool of magic.
Yeah.
You know, like your saw or your drill.
I think it's interesting you bring that up because I think she's also specifically tying back to the second book and what happened there and Harry's defeat of Voldemort and how he defeated Voldemort and the connection that they have because of that. Because she's also going to mention, of course, his connection because of his scar later on with Voldemort. So she really is starting to tie some of these things together, which, of course, are going to be huge as we get towards the end of the series.
The connection between Harry and Voldemort from here is only going to get stronger and more important.
Yes. I love that she shows how much Harry has learned in his 4 years in the magical world, which is that he wants to figure out what this bowl of swirling liquid is, but he knows that sticking his hand into a bowl of unknown substance is a dumb idea. And so he pulls out his wand and begins to swish it around. I love that little moment because she just does a very small thing there to say, hey, yeah, Harry's figured some things out about the magical world, and he's going to do this the right way.
Although I did find that weird, because you would think Dumbledore's office should be relatively safe, considering, one, it's in Hogwarts, and two, it's Dumbledore's office. But, yeah, he used caution even in that office, which was interesting.
Well, and I think what it shows is that Harry realizes he doesn't understand every magical thing, you know, item, and therefore to be careful, because he's realized that, you know, there can be properties which you don't understand. And so it could be a good tool, but if you use it wrongly, it could turn into something bad. And so I just appreciate that for him. And then, of course, what it is, the Pensieve, we find is that he ends up in a bunch of Dumbledore's memories that we get to relive. And these memories take place, we don't even know, it's never said what it is, but it
does know that Mad-Eye Moody has both of his eyes, though.
Yes, and Dumbledore looks relatively the same at this point.
Several other people look generally the same, but a little bit younger.
Yes, but we also know that it is some kind of courtroom or judgment center. And the first memory has Karkaroff being led in from Azkaban, because apparently he has names that are what he thinks of it are going to be useful, and he's basically trading these for a lighter sentence and or release, which Moody's not all that happy about.
No, and he keeps making these comments under his breath, much more so than he does now. He makes a couple snide comments, but not nearly to the extent that we get in this chapter as former Moody.
We also find it really interesting, too, because it is the Dementors that lead him in. And we have this whole little conversation between Moody and Dumbledore, and Moody saying, oh, I forgot you don't like Dementors. And he's, you know, Dumbledore says, no, I think it's wrong for us to ally with such creatures. And Moody's like, but for filth like this? And it's such an interesting thing, because he's basically saying, well, yeah, but I mean, we'll make a deal with the devil because these people are really bad, right? That legitimizes, basically saying, two wrongs make a right.
So I always read this conversation and always read her play sort of on the Death Eaters as her, because, you know, most of what she writes has some sort of political or social commentary buried within it, right? Nothing really kind of means nothing. And I always took this one to really mean her thoughts and feelings on capital punishment, and that, you know, two wrongs don't make a right, and that, you know, do we really have the authority to be torturing people and putting them through this cruel and unusual punishment that in America is avoided but replaced with capital punishment. So I always kind of felt like it was her stab at the prison system, and then Death Eater specifically was kind of the debate on capital punishment, where there's really not a right or a wrong answer to it, but there's definitely two sides to the argument, and there's definitely, you know, you can justify it either way you go, which is why it's one that can't be settled. So I always sort of felt like that to me was her subtle nod and her way of not getting herself too buried in that argument. But I always sort of align her with Dumbledore's thoughts and feelings on things. And so in this case, you know, it's sort of her stab at capital punishment. I would argue, because they don't believe they do capital punishment in England or in the UK, but I could totally be wrong there. But yeah. I always sort of took it with that grain of salt. And maybe I'm reading too much into it, but that was where I always felt like she sort of was going with that.
I always took it to be that Dumbledore kind of believes in the sanctity of human life, and that even if a person has done wrong, they deserve to be treated with respect. By aligning themselves with the Dementors, we are making ourselves no better than the people who do wrong things that deserve to, you know, be put in like a wizarding prison. And that torment, especially when you think of Dementors, it really does make them less than human. So Dumbledore, that's where I always came to it, is that Dumbledore's problem is that by allowing the Dementors to attack these people, you're not doing anything better than what they are probably in there for, which most of these people are in there because they have killed other wizards, you know. But then by torturing them, you're making them less than human. And they're just because they killed other humans doesn't mean they're not also human. So I can see where you're coming from. I'd never taken it that far, but I definitely see that Dumbledore does not believe that anybody should be subjected to Dementors. And mainly, too, because they're such a dark magic thing. You know, like it seems to be antithetical to everything that a good witch or wizard should stand for, you know? And we justify it by saying, but they did wrong, you know, or they're evil. But again, that doesn't make us any better than the people that did this evil. And so I think, yeah, it does make for a really fascinating...
An eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind.
It does make for a really fascinating discussion. And I think she does a good job of just broaching the subject and allowing you to kind of think what you'd like. And so,
you know, she brings it up and lets you handle it, and you can dwell on it and play with it if you want, or you can move right on past it and you move on with the rest of the chapter. She doesn't make one party right over the other, and you just kind of get to make of it what you will. And you know, she gets to put her perspective out there without hammering you over the head with it, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, no, I agree. And we get all these names that Karkaroff is mentioning. We get the mention of...
Oh, yeah, because Karkaroff is the Death Eater.
Yeah.
We forgot
that
part.
Oh, he was a Death Eater. So that's where we find out that that connection with whatever it is on his arm. We hear about one called Augustus Rookwood, who works in the Department of Ministries, which that may be the first mention of the Department of Ministries. I can't quite recall, but I think it is.
I think that's right. That's the first one that I can remember.
It's going to be important, folks. So it's going to be big.
Yeah. We also, what's interesting here is we get several memories as well versus the one big one you get in the movie. You get several of them spelled out, which I actually really enjoyed more, and it makes more sense.
Well, and before we leave Karkaroff, you know, he mentions Snape.
Yeah.
And he says Snape is a Death Eater. And of course, Dumbledore, that's where he says, well, you know, I've given evidence on this matter. He turned for us to great, you know, peril
very
himself.
Early on,
yes,
to do anything. So,
and so that's really fascinating. But yeah, like you said, we get all these other memories. And at the beginning of the next memory, who should be there but a younger Rita Skeeter?
Yeah. And you're in a slightly different courthouse setting for that one. You know, they mentioned even the air was different. Mm-hmm. It felt a little more lighthearted in that one. In that one, you find out the person being interrogated, I guess, is probably the best way, because really wasn't being convicted, was Ludo Bagman, a young Ludo Bagman, you know, still in his Quidditch heyday, realizing that he's not going to be able to do that forever. And, you know, this person had promised him a job at the ministry, and, you know, he had delivered some messages, and he had no idea what they meant or who they were to or anything like that.
Well, and we hear that it was Rookwood who was giving this information to. So what we just heard in the last memory actually has something to do with this memory. So we're getting a little bit of tie-in there.
And then from there, we flash to the last one, which is the most dramatic. And you end up with, you know, Mr. Crouch, who seems to be in charge of these interrogations, if you will, or this overall investigation. He seems to be the point of authority on them, which I think is something we learned early on, is he used to head part of this, the interrogation into the time, the, you know, the Voldemort investigation or whatever they called it. I can't remember now. He's interrogating four different people, including a woman who I think we will find out who that is later. And a younger preteen kid who's just denying these charges. And that's when you learn that that kid is Barty Crouch's son, and that he, you know, basically just owns his son and sends them all to Azkaban.
And not only that, but the reason that he is being charged with this and what he's being charged with was the fact he and these other people used the Cruciatus Curse on the Longbottoms. So we learn about Neville's parents and that they were tortured.
Who turn out to be Aurors. Mm-hmm. And are tortured, yeah, like you were saying. And that they are, that at least the father is a world-class Auror. It's not really clarified here if mom is as well, but I'm pretty sure she is.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, Harry's like, oh, did they die too? You know, trying to sort of bond with Neville. And, you know, Dumbledore later tells him, like, no, they weren't killed. They're still alive. They've just completely lost their minds. And they're at the hospital. And Neville and his grandmother visit them every holiday. But they don't know who they are anymore. And that almost to Harry feels like, at least for me, and I get the impression from Harry, that it's almost worse than his parents just being dead.
I mean, your parents being tortured to insanity.
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's and having to relive it every time you see them because they're still alive and have lost their mind and they don't know who you are anymore. Like, that's heavy.
Well, and it also gives us a sense of how bad the Cruciatus Curse is. Like, we hadn't had that. We got a little bit of what that's like with the spider, right? But to actually understand that you can...
But not that long-term effect of it.
That if you continued to do this to somebody, you could literally drive them insane.
It almost makes him pity Neville even more than Neville has already been pitied. You know, and Dumbledore ends with Harry asking that what he's learned of Neville should not be shared. That's for Neville to share in his own time. You know, please use discretion. And Dumbledore answers most of Harry's questions, except for one big one that he has.
Yeah, and I think this is fascinating because one of the things that's really interesting is he shows Harry how the Pensieve works and the way in which it kind of he can take all of these thoughts together and put them in there, and then they sort of start to combine and create these other things. And so he starts to see all these different faces. You know, we also see Bertha Jorkins as a kid in school, you know, when Dumbledore had her as a student. So all of these things are combining, and what I find so interesting is this is actually the point. And this is the point where the movie got it wrong. This is the point where Dumbledore kind of shows his true feelings on what's happening. And you see his impatience. You see his tiredness. Like, she mentions a couple of times that Dumbledore looks older and tireder than Harry had ever seen him. And you can tell that there are points when he's also pacing and thinking. And so this is the first time that we've ever seen Dumbledore seem out of sorts or out of himself in the sense that he's not in control of the situation here. And I think
or that he just doesn't have a good handle.
Yeah. Yes. Because all of these memories are just a kind of a jumble. They're not really coalescing. Like, it's like Dumbledore has the puzzle pieces too that we've been talking about, but he can't figure out how to put them all together. And if he can't figure it out,
normally he's the box lid.
Exactly.
He's normally the box lid standing back letting the kids put the puzzle together. And now he's like, oh, yeah, no, I totally know what this is supposed to look like. I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's just like, I don't know. Yeah, I feel like this is kind of, I don't know, I almost get the feeling this is the first time that Dumbledore is starting to feel old. Like this situation is where he's like, nothing is coming together. I'm missing something. I know it. It's in there somewhere. I can't remember. Like, it's that first time that he experiences that. He's just like frustrated by it because he's not used to that. Which adds to this frustration. So it's just building and growing, and he knows he knows Harry's at risk, and he doesn't want to worry Harry, but you know, he shares a lot with him. And then Harry asks him.
And that's something that I think is fascinating here, too, is that we really do get Harry being told quite a bit. And I really enjoy that. But like you said, there is one question that Dumbledore will not answer, and that is what Snape had done to redeem himself in Dumbledore's eyes, and he says, that is between me and Professor Snape. And then he turns to Harry and he says, good luck on the third task. I just love how Dumbledore likes to change, you know. Yeah, it's fantastic.
I love how he has that tone too that Harry picks up on. The like, we're done with this conversation tone. I always think of it as the parent tone. We're not talking about this anymore. This is done. Move on.
Well, and I appreciate that because I do think, you know, Harry respects it too. You know, yeah. Harry, you don't see him getting upset here with Dumbledore. He respects that Dumbledore has told him everything that he thinks he should be told, and that is enough. And it is interesting, and I think it's fascinating, to see that there is something about Snape that Dumbledore trusts. And I think that's fascinating because he's a character which we've had questions on this whole series so far. And yet here we clearly see that Dumbledore has a faith in Snape that most people don't. And he believes that he has a good reason for that. And that I find fascinating.
The relationship with Snape keeps getting twistier and twistier. It just keeps going, and there's so much depth being built in that you hate him, but then you're like, I feel like I shouldn't hate him, but I hate that guy.
Well, and part of that is that, as we were mentioning earlier, there's this whole idea of choices, and the choices that we continually see Snape making are ones that are vindictive and jerky and turdish towards everyone, you know? And I think the way that Rowling has set up her story is that we judge people by their choices. And so because the only choice that we've seen Snape really make here, for the most part, is to be a complete tool. It's
the turdish ones, exactly. As you so eloquently put it.
Exactly. I'm being, you know, it's a family show.
It's wonderful.
the fact that that's all we've seen, it really puts us at a disadvantage. And yet we get this sense that Dumbledore has seen something else, which is the thing that makes it quite interesting. Because if that's the case, what is that? And of course, Harry also wants to know that as well. And so it leaves us hanging here, but we're not going to get told. And it'll be a while before we get to know that. So,
yeah, I feel like that's a relatable thing, though, that we all have somebody at work or a friend with another friend. You're just like, I just don't like that person. I just don't understand what you see in them. And you keep trying to understand. And at some point, you just have to have faith in whatever colleague that you do trust or friend. Be like, okay, I'm gonna chalk it up. There's gotta be something there. I'm gonna let it go until I learn or until I have a reason to believe otherwise. Sometimes we're disappointed, but often, you know, that faith actually earns us a little bit of something. So
it does. And honestly, I would say this makes me so excited to continue this book and, you know, get to the end of it, because I just can't wait to see how all these pieces come together. And, you know, obviously I've seen the movie a bunch and I've read the book a bunch. But it is always fun the way that she pulls these things together. And to me, that just makes it exciting. And again,
well, I can't believe we forgot a big part of this chapter. We also learned that Dumbledore has been communicating with Sirius this whole time. And he says something like, "You didn't think you were the only one who corresponded with him, did you? Who do you think told him to hide out in that cave?" Like, I love that moment. I just love the fact that, okay, so now Harry can't get away with you know, ignoring one or the other, because they're working together to protect him and hold him accountable. But I did find that so interesting and fascinating, and so much depth to that, that not only did he turn a blind eye in the previous book, but he too has been communicating with Sirius.
Yes.
So, you know, it helped, I think, earn him a little bit of cred, if you will, with Harry, and that he knows the person he trusts also trusts the other person that he trusts.
Yes.
And you can put each person wherever you want to put them. But that's such an interesting little plot device and element that becomes, I think it makes the next book even that much richer.
I think you're right. I think it does a lot for the character of Sirius here in just that one short little line. And it does a lot for the character of Dumbledore, because it shows us the way in which he interacts with all of these different people, and the way he's willing to trust somebody like Harry and Harry's word on what has happened. You know, like, he trusts what Harry told him and everything that happened in the third book. You know, so it's building this level of trust between all of these characters, and that is really cool.
And it really enriches a character that we, for reasons, can't have in the book as much as maybe we would like to have in order to establish this relationship. It does it by proxy, right? Like, the fact that Sirius has earned Dumbledore's pardon, if you will, only shows the greater character that's there that we can't get from spending time with that character, since he's sort of not able to be there in the book beyond the occasional owl communication, owl post. Oh, I love it when they say the name of the book.
Oh, me too. Me too. It makes me really happy, actually.
It does. So, I did like that part of it, and it leads it off in even a more mysterious and enriching way to move on to this next chapter.
Mm-hmm. It does. It absolutely does. And it makes me really excited, because, you know, we don't have that much more in the story, and I can't wait to see how it all comes to play out. But, Drea, you know, if anybody wants to talk to you about what's been going on in the story or anything else, where can they catch up with you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick. Or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. You can also find me on Instagram under the same name. You can find me here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, talking all about Star Wars each and every week. It's a lot of fun. I do hope that you'll check it out. You can find me over in the Trek FM network talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine on the Orb. You can also find me doing the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, as we talk about all the geeky fandoms that we love. You can also find me doing one more show, and that is called Cinema Stories, and I do that with my good friend Courtney, as we talk all about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.